Hello and welcome to this month's Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care CME podcast interview. My name is Guy Melrose. As technology advances, the cost barrier to accessing point-of-care ultrasound, or POCUS, is coming down. But what is POCUS? What can it add to our clinical practice? And is it something we should be using in urgent care? Okay, so I'd like to welcome to the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care's podcast, Dr. Kelvin Ward. Kelvin is a fellow of the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care and medical director of the Wellington Accident and Urgent Medical Centre down in New Zealand's capital, down in Wellington. And he's going to be talking on our podcast today because of a special interest that he's developed over the last few years in point of care ultrasound. And this is a growing medium for us to use in the future going forwards, and he's really taken the bull by the horns and got stuck in with becoming trained and experienced in this. So welcome to the podcast, Kelvin. Thank you for talking to us today.
Oh, thanks very much for having me, Guy. It's a pleasure.
Now, if we start with point-of-care ultrasound, or POCUS, as it's often shortened to, when somebody asks you about POCUS in urgent care, how do you describe it to them? How do you kind of describe what you do and what it is?
Well, the definition, or my definition, of point-of-care ultrasound is the use of ultrasound by the attending clinician. So that's the doctor seeing the patient the use of ultrasound by them at the bedside. And what you're really doing is trying to answer some binary questions, some yes and no questions about that patient, which will help you guide decision-making about that patient's treatment and disposition.
Ultrasound we're obviously familiar with because we refer patients for formal ultrasounds from a radiology department. But what you're doing isn't formal radiology. So how does POCUS differ to the formal radiology that we're probably more familiar with?
Yeah, sure. Well, POCUS is essentially it's a focus test. So you're really only aiming to answer those specific yes and no questions. Sometimes it's been described as an extension of the physical examination, but it's really an augmentation of that physical examination where you're trying to narrow the differential diagnosis through answering specific questions. And that's distinct from a formal or comprehensive radiology scan. We're really just sort of focusing down on a particular question we want to answer. And that may be, does the patient have an abdominal aortic aneurysm? Does the patient have gallstones? Does the patient have a DVT? So we're really just answering specific questions.
I think in one of the talks you've given at the Goodfellow Symposium on this, you described it as almost like an extension of the stethoscope. It's like a tool in that regard for answering specific questions. And I quite like imagining it in my head in that sort of way.
Mm. It comes in my mind after the physical examination. So it's not part of the physical examination, but it follows the history and the examination, which allows you to form a clinical impression or a differential diagnosis. And once you've formed that differential diagnosis based on your clinical impression, then the use of point-of-care ultrasound allows you to narrow down that differential by ruling in or ruling out specific diagnoses or questions that have been raised by that differential.
So how did you discover point-of-care ultrasound? How did you become interested in it? What was it that made you think, this is something I need to do?
Well, it was, I think in 2012, I arranged a CME session for the doctors who work at our clinic. Our clinic has up to 200 doctors on our roster, made up of both urgent care and general practice doctors. And we had some of the emergency physicians from the local hospital come and talk on a variety of topics. And one of those topics was by Scott Bowman, who's the Director of Emergency Ultrasound at Wellington ED. And he described how they use ultrasound in the ED. And it was really an epiphany moment for me, even though the cases were maybe those that you wouldn't typically see in the urgent care setting. I could really see how this could be so useful in my practice with helping to rule in or rule out diagnoses that were part of my differential. And so from there, the following year, I did a course that Scott runs, a two-day course that he runs every year in Wellington, and subsequently enrolled on the Otago point-of-care ultrasound course. That's a one-year course run through the University of Otago. And from there, the rest is history. But prior to that talk in 2012, I don't think I'd even heard of point-of-care ultrasound. Certainly wasn't aware of the extent it was used in the emergency department.
Am I right in saying that it's now a part of an emergency department training? The FACEM training now includes it as a requirement now for ED?
I believe so. I believe this year it's been formalised within the requirements of the emergency medicine training within Australasia. And for a number of years, it has been a requirement for emergency medicine training in the United States. It's one of their core requirements for fellowship.
So it's very much an evolving specialty, the point of care ultrasound. And indeed, if anyone listened to us talking with Dinesh Dionarain up in Everest, they were using it up there. Because of the flexibility of using it. The point of view of your use of it within the urgent care setting, how is it adapted to urgent care scope of practice, and what do you specifically use it for within an urgent care clinic?
Sure. Well, I think it's the scope of point-of-care ultrasound in urgent care is very similar to the way it's used in the emergency department. The applications that I use it for are almost identical, the difference being that we see a different subset of patients. We don't see major trauma, for example, and generally the presentations in urgent care are less acute. However, the type of scans we're doing are the same, and the questions we're asking are the same. So it's used basically, anywhere in the body you can use ultrasound, there's an application for it. But the common applications would be looking at the heart to answer questions about left ventricular function, to answer questions about whether it was a pericardial effusion, whether there's signs of right heart strain. We use ultrasound to look at the lungs, to rule in or out pneumothoraces, to look for pneumonia, pleural effusions. In the abdomen, we're looking at the aorta, at the gallbladder for the presence of gallstones, the kidney for presence of hydronephrosis as a marker of renal colic, early pregnancy, DVT, the list just goes on and on. So within each of those applications, there are specific binary questions that we're looking to answer.
And you mentioned briefly at the beginning about the difference between formal ultrasound from a radiologist and POCUS. How confident are you that in your abilities to determine some of this pathology, given the training that you've been through? Is it a safe thing for us to be doing? And the follow-up to that would be, what do the radiology departments feel about this being done in an urgent care setting?
Well, it's a big topic. Point-of-care ultrasound has certainly been extensively studied, especially in the emergency medicine literature. And across a wide range of applications, it's been shown to be, in the hands of emergency physicians trained in point-of-care ultrasound, to be very sensitive and specific for a wide range of different conditions. You have to, however, understand the test that you're using and the characteristics of that test and be able to apply it within the clinical context. And also know from experience when you're able to confidently answer the question that you're posing and when you just don't have the information available to answer that question. And when you don't have confidence that you can answer the question, or the test is not sensitive or specific enough, then you can always go back to what you would have done without ultrasound. And I think that's one of the keys, being able to know how to integrate it into your clinical practice, and when you're not able to confidently rely on the answer, that you can answer the questions.
And how many of the patients that you do an ultrasound on would you then get a formal ultrasound on top of that? Do you have numbers on that? Do you audit those?
I guess it depends what the question you're answering is. For example, if I have a patient who presents with undifferentiated upper abdominal or epigastric pain, my differential may include several different diagnoses like gastritis or pancreatitis or gallstone disease. And I would use point-of-care ultrasound in that setting to answer the question, does the patient have gallstones? Now, if I get good views and I'm confident that I can answer that question, that they don't have gallstones, then at that point I would move on disposition the patient based on the other differentials and the likelihood of those. So in that setting, I may not get a formal ultrasound. However, if I do identify gallstones and the patient's going to need to see a surgeon potentially, then a formal ultrasound would be requested. And it's specific to the particular application that you're using, and there's really no one answer to that question.
So I guess if you've been using this now since 2014, about five or so years.
That's right. Yeah.
Over this time, I'm guessing you've got a number of examples of when ultrasound has contributed positively to the way that you manage patients. Are you able to maybe just talk briefly on one of those, or give an example of how it significantly changed your management?
Yeah, sure. There's many examples. There's one case of a woman in her 70s that I saw a couple of years ago, and her presenting complaint was that of leg pain, which she'd had for about 4 days. And this had started after she'd had a fall. She'd felt dizzy and collapsed in the street, and was taken to the hospital. And prior to this, she'd been suffering from gastroenteritis for about 4 or 5 weeks, but was improving. And it was thought that the collapse was likely due to dehydration from this ongoing gastroenteritis. And she was rehydrated and subsequently discharged. And then 4 days later, when she came to see me, she was worried that she might have a clot in her leg, but was also not sure whether she'd injured her leg during the fall a few days before. She looked also a little bit puffed, walking from the waiting room, and admitted to having a cough and some shortness of breath for about 6 weeks. And when I examined her, she had a non-tender leg, but it was a bit more swollen than the other side, and she was a little bit tachycardic. And the ultrasound in this setting confirmed that she had a DVT on that side. She had a femoral vein clot, which extended down to the popliteal fossa. And when I looked at her heart, she had signs of right heart strain. So she had a dilated right ventricle and a flattened intraventricular septum, which are signs of right ventricular pressure overload. So in the context of her presentation, it was now clear that she had a DVT and probable submassive PE, and she was referred up to the hospital, and a CT scan confirmed that. So I think in this setting, it's likely her collapse was related to PE at that stage 4 days prior. And I'm sure, given the leg swelling, we would have eventually have identified the pathology, but the ultrasound really focused the diagnosis and made it a lot more certain and made it much easier to refer that patient rapidly rather than waiting for other investigations.
And I guess that's one of the benefits of this is that you were referring somebody with a much more complete picture that you'd been quite quickly able to establish in your clinic without sending the patient off to somewhere else or without having to maybe make a judgment call with less information so it cleared the fog a little bit. But yeah. In terms of maybe with that person, when you phone the hospital, how do they react to you when you tell them that you've done point of care ultrasound? Do you get any kind of dismissals from any of the admitting physicians at the hospital when you talk to them?
Yeah, my experience on that is varied. I find that hospital doctors who are familiar with the use of point-of-care ultrasound are generally very receptive. So I have a good relationship with the emergency doctors at Wellington ED, and they have a very extensive ultrasound program there, and they're all they're very accepting and pleased that these scans are done in the community to provide that extra information. Similarly, some of the cardiology registrars are surprised but pleased with the extra information that comes by way of a referral of a patient, as are maybe the obstetric and gynecology registrars who are also pleased and somewhat surprised that they get this information in the referrals. Some other specialties are a little bit more sceptical, and I find that the information is maybe somewhat overlooked or dismissed. But it's a struggle we're hopefully slowly winning.
And I guess it must help you in those situations as it's coming to the end of the evening and the clinic might be closing when you don't have access to formal ultrasounds, but the alternative is a referral to these people and to the specialties at the hospital and asking them, hey, I don't think I can send this person home because I can't rule this out. So they're not seeing this because you're probably not referring as many people because you're able to say, oh no, this person doesn't have a DVT, this person can go home tonight, rather than does this person have a large above knee DVT and are they safe to go home until we've looked into it? And so I guess I guess they don't see the ones that you're not now sending in.
That's right. I think the benefits of point of care ultrasound, they're not always dramatic. You don't always find a very dramatic diagnosis, or it doesn't always greatly shift your diagnostic focus. But the gains are often small and cumulative, but significant. For example, along the lines of what you were just describing, I saw a patient a couple of weeks ago in his 50s who presented with what sounded like renal colic, but he'd never had renal colic in the past. And he settled down with some pain relief. And I guess the question in our minds when somebody's approaching 60 is the possibility of a AAA. And maybe in this case, it wasn't that likely, but I was able to rule out the patient having a AAA and avoid sending him to the ED for further investigation. And subsequently, he had outpatient investigation. And so ultrasound can sometimes avoid the need for hospital referral. It can make hospital referral more focused or more direct. And sometimes it's as simple as really decluttering your mind in terms of differential diagnosis and help offload some of those diagnoses that you might be worried about, which you can then focus on the other parts of your differential.
And you mentioned they're not always dramatic, but you have got some dramatic cases, which we are not going to spoil just now, because in subsequent podcasts, you're going to do some case histories, which will cover some of these. So your five-year history of accumulating interesting cases, we will be tapping into that at a later date. But it's interesting you mentioned that patient you just had recently. We had one this very week in the clinic I work in, and it was the very same thing. Old enough to be concerned about AAAs, and this particular person got referred to the emergency department, and they did point of care ultrasound there to exclude it because we had no other way of doing it. And when the ultrasound clinics are closed and you've got that possibility that it could be that, you can't send that person home. So the difference for us was this person became an ED statistic, whereas for you it wasn't.
That's right. And it has benefits both on saving work at the emergency department and also, as I mentioned before, sort of this cognitive offloading. So you, the diagnosis that you may be worried about if you sent that patient home, it has been excluded, and so you don't have to waste mental energy worrying about that possibility.
And we've mentioned ED have embraced this into their training, and it's become a feature of emergency department medicine. Do you see it becoming a feature of urgent care?
Oh, absolutely. I think that this the ball's already rolling, and in New Zealand, for example, there are now at least three other urgent care centres that are in the process of purchasing or have purchased ultrasound equipment and are in the process of training their staff. So I think it's taken a while, but there's definitely some momentum, and I think urgent care is particularly well placed to be able to develop urgent point of care ultrasound, partly because we are a relatively small specialty. There's a relatively small number of clinics, but we see a large number of patients every year, many of whom would benefit from having these specific questions answered. And so I think it'll be relatively easy to get a wide coverage of point-of-care ultrasound within a short space of time, given that we've got a relatively small number of clinics. I think it's when rather than if.
Now, we're going to go into this in a further podcast, a little bit more depth about the training and the recertification and all the peer group stuff that you have to do and the costs and everything involved in this. So if anybody is interested in learning more about this, you're going to talk in more depth in a further podcast. But just briefly, what for those listening now who are maybe thinking this is interesting, you've lit the little light bulb that you had lit in 2012. Where would you advise they start maybe having a look and finding out some more information to maybe satisfy that little itch that started?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think once you become aware of that point of care ultrasound is actually a thing and how it could be used in urgent care, I think one of the things that was really helpful for me was to do a short course to get a better understanding of the scope and how you go about performing it in your practice. And that doesn't necessarily mean you will have equipment in your practice to go back and use it, but it will give you a taster. I did Scott Bowman's course. There's a website called wellingtonultrasound.com, and I think he's got a course coming up later in the year in November. And I believe there are some courses arranged also later in the year, which members could contact the college about to see whether there's space on those. But a two-day course is really a great way to get a good insight into the use of ultrasound in urgent care. There's also a vast number of open access medical education resources on the web. There are multiple podcasts, and some of the good ones would be ultrasoundpodcast.com, 5minutesono.com are two good American-based emergency medicine POCUS podcasts. And so people could start there to see what it's all about.
And it's also worth mentioning that people can go to urgentcareultrasound.co.nz, which is a blog that you yourself write and post cases on there. And what's fascinating is you post images, so moving images of ultrasounds, so people, you know, to augment the case. So one thing that we'll be doing in the future is you'll be presenting some cases here in podcast form, and people will be able to see the images on your website. So they should definitely bookmark urgentcareultrasound.co.nz, and you link also there to a lot of the other things that you just mentioned. So
I would just make a comment that the case we talked about before, the lady with the pulmonary embolus, if people are interested in looking at the images of that case, it's case number 4 on the website. And as you said, Guy, when we present a case in future episodes, we'll link that through to the website with the images, so that people can listen to the story and look at the images at the same time.
Excellent. So I hope people have had a taster. Those of you who aren't aware of POCUS as an entity, hopefully you've had your eyes open. Those of you who have heard of it, maybe hearing Kelvin has fanned those flames a little bit more. And as I say, there will be a further podcast where we're going to go into a bit more depth about how, here in New Zealand at least, you can go into training and implementing this into your practice, including questions like, how much does this equipment cost? Because it's surprising how that barrier has dropped. I was very surprised when I learnt. I won't spoil it now, but it's much cheaper than you would have imagined. So thank you, Kelvin, for giving us this introduction to point-of-care ultrasound. You're certainly at the leading edge of urgent care ultrasound here in New Zealand. So it's something that's only going to grow from here. So we'll obviously be in touch and hear more from you in future podcasts. But for now, thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Guy, and I really look forward to our upcoming chats.
My thanks to Kelvin for talking to our podcast. As we mentioned, there will be an extended talk covering things in a bit more depth for those of you who have had their appetite for POCUS whetted. We will look at the training requirements, the costs, equipment costs, quality assurance, and those sorts of details. Look out for it on our podcast feed in the coming weeks. We will also be having regular POCUS case histories featuring on the podcast, so we can highlight how POCUS can add to your patient management. As always, if you have any questions, comments, suggestions, or corrections, email podcast@rnzcuc.org.nz. We'll be back next week with another podcast. I look forward to seeing you all then, but for now, thanks for listening.